All right, I think we're ready to get started. So thanks everyone for joining us on the Smart Cities Collaborative Funding Webinar. My name is Jeff Anderson. I'm the President and CEO of Smart Growth America. For those who are not fully keeping track of our organization, Smart Growth America is the actual 501c3 in which Transportation for America is located. So Smart Growth America, we have several programs, including LOCUS. Christopher Coase is here from LOCUS, the Governor's Institute on Community Design, Local Leaders Council, a number of others. So Transportation for America is one of our programs. It's really exciting to have everyone today to talk about smart cities. There's clearly, this has been a topic that is growing tremendously in interest around the country. And we're already seeing applications in the real world of technology radically changing the way cities are functioning. For us at Smart Growth America and Transportation for America, we think that technology offers real possibilities to improve communities and to further the mission that we're all about, which is building better lives by building better communities. Obviously, that's got a ton of different applications. I'm excited about this collaborative and its focus on transportation because I think that's where a lot of the innovation has been, and I think there's only more that we're expecting to see. A big part of this, of course, is what we're here to talk about today, and that's funding. And there's all the excitement and the potential opportunity, but you actually have to try these things in places, and of course, that's what you all are all about, is actually putting technology to use on the ground and seeing whether we can, in fact, fulfill some of our economic, our social, our environmental goals through the application of technology. And you've got to be able to fund those projects. And the funding landscape right now, I think, is interesting and uncertain. Like I said, there's all kinds of interest. And sometimes I feel like there's just sort of a frenzy about, we're going to do smart cities. And then you've got to kind of bore a little deeper into that to say, well, what aspect are you working on, and what does that mean about where you might fund something? Obviously, an application of technology in the medical field is completely different than transportation. So the funding landscape, I think, really ends up depending in some part on the particular applications that you're talking about, even within as broad a field as transportation. Autonomous vehicles is going to be different from some of the other data applications for bus routing or other things. And we've got great speakers to talk about these topics today. We're going to sort of organize this by federal opportunities, state, metropolitan region, and then philanthropic, really taking the perspective of cities and the places they often go to think about funding. The speakers we have today, I'm going to introduce all four of them, and I recognize that you only see three at the moment, and I'll explain that. I'm going to introduce all four of them, and then we'll hear from them in order. Christopher Coase is really going to focus on the federal level. Christopher is the Vice President for Real Estate Policy and External Affairs here at Smart Growth America, and also the Director of LOCUS, which is our coalition of developers. We have Stan Suchan. Welcome, Stan. He's with Data Evaluation and Project Development Manager in the Public Transportation Division in the state of Washington's Department of Transportation. The person we don't have yet, but we expect to log in a sort of just-in-time delivery application, is Doug Johnson, and he's Principal of Transportation and Land Use Development at Metropolitan Transportation Commission, MTC, in California. And finally, Lisa Jacobson, Program Officer for Mobility at the Barr Foundation. And without further ado, Christopher, I'm going to kick it over to you.
Thank you, Jeff, and thank you to the Smart City Challenge at T for America for this invitation. I'd like to spend a few moments to give an overview of some of the federal opportunities, funding opportunities that are available at the federal level. Some of these programs you may be very familiar with, but for the sake of conversation, I will try to provide as much of a detailed analysis of each one of those, and then look forward to the conversation later on during the Q&A. The first program I'd like to highlight is the popular TIGER program, and again, not using Washington speak. TIGER stands for the Transportation Investment Generating Economic Recovery. It's a unique program in that it provides grants for innovative road, rail, transit, port projects that really achieve a national objective, including safety, economic competitiveness, state of repair, quality of life, or environmental sustainability. What makes this program a lot different from formula programs is that it's quite flexible and it allows localities, particularly cities and multi-jurisdictional agencies, to actually apply for these dollars, unlike your traditional formula dollars that go through the state DOT. In the past, this program has been funded up to about $500 million. While this is not an authorized program through the Highway Trust Fund, this is a program that has received bipartisan support over the number of years, and we anticipate that this program will continue in the next Congress. The next program, I believe, is of interest for the group, folks on the call, is called the Accelerated Innovation Deployment Demonstration Grant Program, or short AID. This program provides grants to state DOTs, land management agencies, as well as tribal governments to accelerate the implementation and the adoption of proven innovations in highway transportation. Particularly while this program provides grants to projects that have been used and deployed elsewhere, what we found is that many of the eligible project activities that some of you have come up with through your Smart Challenge work are also eligible. However, for localities and regions to apply, they have to become sub-grant recipients with the state DOT. Traditionally, this program has been funded about $10 million each fiscal year, and it's authorized up to 2020. Another program to consider is the Advanced Transportation Congestion Management Technology Deployment Program, and I think I'm going to get a dollar for that. essentially, this program is really designed for a lot of the conversation you guys will be having today. It's targeted to state DOTs, localities, NPOs, transit agencies, to really deploy really advanced transportation congestion management technologies like data collection, as Jeff mentioned before, technologies associated with autonomous vehicles, electric pricing, and so forth. There are other programs that you should just be aware of, like the TAP program, which traditionally supported biped infrastructure, or your traditional capital investment grant programs like New Starts and Small Starts. But these are programs that you definitely should keep on your radar. But one thing to keep in mind, while like the programs that I mentioned before, as well as the capital investment programs like New Starts and Small Starts, many of these programs are authorized by the FAST Act. However, Congress has to fund them. And so if these programs are of interest to you, it's very critical that you reach out to your members of Congress and your senators to let them know, as they are making their considerations through the appropriation process or to the current CR, that these are programs that are very important to the projects you're trying to do.
Sir, can you repeat that last program? I just got a request for that.
Yes. The last program that I mentioned was the Capital Investment Grant Program, which includes the New Starts Program and Small Starts. Those two programs actually finance a lot of our public transportation in the country. New Starts are for projects that are above $300 million. Small Starts for projects under $300 million.
Great.
All right. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Jeff, and I look forward to the Q&A. Thank you.
Thank you, Christopher. And that was really well done. One of the things we want to try to do in this webinar is really focus on specific funding opportunities. So we're really talking programs, and Christopher, you said a mouthful of them, so nice job there. So from here, we're going to turn it over to you, Stan. Welcome, and go ahead.
Hi, everybody. I'm with the state of Washington, and I know different states have different unique aspects to their programs and funding, but I think there's some things in common and some trends that are really relevant to this funding conversation. One that we just heard from Christopher is, in many cases, you need to have a partner at the state in order to either access the money at all or to better compete for the money. And I know that our state, like many of your states, has a very urban area that is pushing the boundaries of innovation and has very different needs than the rest of the state. And there often are state legislators and others who don't aren't invested in innovation in cities or may not understand what's happening in a city versus what's happening in their community. So that can create a challenge in some environments that I think you might run into when you're trying to innovate and when you're focused on innovation in a city. So in our state, we do have some specific grant programs that are kind of a fit for this kind of innovation, and we have had transit agencies and cities push the boundaries for our competitive grant programs in and succeed at that. I guess what's interesting about that approach, we have a variety, and state-funded competitive grant programs differ from state to state, but I guess really the message there is don't be afraid to push the boundary of that program a little. You might be surprised that you're successful. Examples include things like we have a regional mobility grant program that's really been traditionally used for infrastructure for transit and for transit service, transit equipment around the state. We have had organizations that decided to try to do some TDM and technology investments through that program. They competed and won, and the legislature approved their competitive grant projects. So they pushed the boundaries a little bit and have really helped us as a state rethink what it means to invest in mobility as opposed to just transit or just roads. So we have a variety of state grant programs, and I think that approach has worked. Another way that local jurisdictions have done a really great job getting funding is embedding their innovative projects and programs in larger projects. And to do that, they have really partnered very early in the process with transit agencies, with the state, to create a sense of shared ownership of that component of the project. So I've been around the state DOT a long time. I have seen that when value engineering comes into play on the highway side, it's often ITS and other components that are innovative that get cut. I have seen in cases where there is the shared ownership, where those innovations are built into the earliest phase of a project, that actually that has not happened. So on a variety of our projects and programs, it really has been the innovation started sometimes from a city or a transit agency, got embedded really into the DNA of a project early, and that has been a way to get state funding through what is traditionally considered a roadway funding source, the gas tax. Even for our state, gas tax money has actually gone to transit. We have a constitutional ban against that, but because we embedded the transit into the DNA of the project, we've been able to overcome that, and even when challenged, to overcome that. So I think that early engagement, it is costly, it can be hard, it takes a lot of patience, persistence, and education, but it has been very effective for us for helping us, not just the folks within the state DOT, but our legislators and others, not just see the value in embedding that innovation, but fund it. So I look forward to continuing that conversation, both on the state grant side, but also on the how do we embed innovation into project. How do we kind of work the existing system, as flawed as it is, to build this kind of innovation into projects, get some funding, and prove what works and doesn't work and learn from it? I also have to say, I represent a state, we're inherently risk averse. Technology innovation is scary. You end up on television for your horribly wasteful, risky project. We state legislators and state officials and state DOTs, the slightest things feel like we are sticking our neck out and taking a real risk. So that also is something that local folks have helped us overcome over and over again. And I think that, again, is a team effort to recognize that that's a true barrier to innovation for states, and how do we work together to overcome that barrier?
Thank you, Stan. I'm sitting here trying to remember all the states that are really risk-friendly, and they're not on the tip of my tongue, but I'm sure they'll come to me.
None of us. I mean, I would say, you could say California or Washington or Minnesota have taken some risks, but really it is not in a state's DNA, state government DNA, to take a lot of risk with technology and innovation.
But I think it's broad. True of government in general, is that there's a fair amount of risk aversity there. Doug, welcome. I had promised the participants that you would demonstrate just-in-time delivery, and so you have. Doug is with the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, and you are up next, so please go ahead. Oh, we can't hear you, though.
Well, that's because you're all mute, so for the invite.
Now.
Great. Yeah, my name is Doug Johnson. I work at the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. We're based in San Francisco, cover the San Francisco Bay Area. You know, I would just, when Russ asked me if I was willing to, you know, participate, I thought it would be great, in part because I'm really interested to hear, obviously, a lot about what cities across the country are doing, and also maybe just to remind us all about the role that MPOs can play. And I think that's going to be very different in different states, depending on what the Metropolitan Planning Organization's functions are, what their legislative permissions are, and so forth. I just thought I'd touch on a few things MTC does. We obviously run a smart card for an ungodly number of transit agencies that operate in our service area, which is a 25 and potentially climbing. Obviously, I think that, you know, initially that was very much just a way to stitch these things together, but I think looking ahead, I think as we think about technology, data, and a platform, this is obviously one of the things I think we're looking at as a critical opportunity to take better advantage of the data and its findings, and to think about how we can use that potentially to connect to other shared services. Obviously, we've got a big bike share system that's going to be growing a lot over the next couple of years. MTC also has a managed lanes program that we work on with our local, not very risky district of Caltrans, as well as our county transportation agencies. Obviously, a lot of work is going into looking at ways to embed CV and ultimately AV into that system from the ground up, but, you know, easily, more easily said than done. And a couple of things I just thought I'd mention, you know, we've long had, I think, a quite a good 511 system, which is recently, or not so recently, I think, been pretty well wiped out by Google and Waze and other kind of new platforms for information about transportation. I think one of the things that we're thinking about is how could we potentially pivot all the great infrastructure we have built up for our 511 system and potentially reorient it towards some of our highest needs communities, some of our seniors, disabled, low-income social service providers, and the like, folks that we have long struggled, I think, to connect in thinking about mobility management as an outcome.
Can you just say what your 511 system is?
Sure. 511 was our old kind of traveler information system. You could call in and you might find out about traffic accidents. You might try to get some help doing some route planning. This feels like a very early 2000s kind of platform. And, you know, we essentially have made that data available. We built a pretty comprehensive transit trip planner. Again, these are things that we built. And then Google came along and others got our data, which we shared, and then, you know, our platform, people stopped clicking on it, you know, pretty quickly. As I think other platforms have gotten better. So I think there's a time when it just becomes important to move on as well, and I think that's something that we're faced with. But we do have some good infrastructure. Question might be for us is how do we think about repositioning some of that built-up technology infrastructure to serve other groups. And the last thing that I'll mention, you know, so I'm in the planning group at MTC. I think we have before us a big question as we do our long-range planning, which is going to get a lot more interesting in the coming years, which is how do we model, discuss, prioritize projects and funding programs given, you know, what are going to be potentially big changes in the transportation system. And so I would certainly encourage, you know, cities to engage heavily in that because I think it's a great opportunity to highlight what some of the needs and opportunities are here and where there's alignment, I think, between regional planning objectives, local planning objectives as well, and to that end, UMTC has started a very modest research program with the other MPOs in California. It's funded to the whopping tune of $70,000 right now, so stand back. But, this initiative is intended to help us start doing some early planning and research and to connect with our, not only our other MPOs throughout the state, which represent a huge chunk of the state's population, but also to really connect with our cities and our transit agencies to talk about how we should be shaping all of our initiatives across our agency to, I think strategically support local initiatives, because one of the things MPOs do struggle with is the fact that we lack a lot of the tools, that cities and transit operators have around regulating, permitting, and the like. And those are, that's the opportunity I think cities also have in terms of that's the currency I would offer. And so I fully acknowledge as an MPO we have limited ability directly, but I think indirectly in supporting cities that are interested in tackling these issues, I think we could be great partners.
Terrific. Thank you, Doug. And finally, we're going to turn, before we get to a chance for some conversation amongst the panel here, to Lisa Jacobson, talking from the perspective of the philanthropic community. Thanks, Lisa.
Great. Thanks, Jeff. So I cannot talk about the entire philanthropic community. I do not have all the answers. I can talk about what we're doing at BAR and my experience with some other funders. BAR, we're based in Boston. We are a regional funder. We primarily focus on city, state, and regional programs. We do have some great strategic national grant making. Transportation for America and Smart Growth America and Locus are great examples of that. But at BAR, in terms of mobility, we have a climate lens. So everything we do, our primary goal is to reduce greenhouse gases. So we invest in both mobility projects and clean energy projects, two of the largest contributors of greenhouse gases. In the mobility space, and in this innovative mobility or new mobility space, whatever it might be called, we are only as smart as you guys are. There's a lot of unanswered questions, as we all know. We're really funding projects now to get smart. And we're primarily doing this in four different ways. I'm happy to talk about examples of all of these. But the first is learning. What research, data, and analysis, kind of planning and evaluation, can we fund that eventually leads to some policy recommendations? So we're really focusing on this research and learning phase, both just within BAR and partnering with other funders like the Energy Foundation and ClimateWorks. Second, we're helping to fund convenings and conferences and events. I'll say in general, the philanthropic community is a good space for that. We're kind of this neutral party. We can bring a lot of different folks together. So whether it's local or national, kind of participating in this convening space, something that we like to do a lot. We also like to fund different aspects of community engagement and or communications, messaging. So great, us wonks in the transportation world can talk all day long, but does my grandmother understand it? What is the general public thinking and feeling? Whether it's polling and different types of surveying and research or some kind of broader communications narratives and campaigns, something that we like to do here a lot and other funders do as well. And then lastly, here at BAR, unlike many states, as Stan directly said, we like risk. Bring it on. Not necessarily, I guess, organizational, reputational risk, but in terms of projects, that is one of our core principles and approaches here. So pilots and demonstration projects, we are all about it. We're funding a few right now in Boston and in the region. With as long as some of that risk is mitigated through grantees, I would say and stand up that we are the place and space, at least here at BAR, to fund some projects that have some risk. Other things that we tend to look for when focusing on these or funding these different types of initiatives, besides the risk, of course, are strong partnerships, whether it's in the nonprofit community, city, state, community partners, whatever it might be. We look for projects where there may not be another funding source. And I think that some of this innovative mobility stuff with the VC money and private funds out there, we are less likely to fund something if there's a bunch of other private money already paying for it. We would like to fund something that doesn't have another funding source. And then, of course, in terms of funding these types of projects, we look for, does this project help the foundation meet our goals? Does it help meet the stated city, state, or regional goals that are outlined in any sort of long-term planning efforts? So I'm happy to talk later about examples of any of these, but I'm excited for the conversation.
Great. Thank you very much, Lisa. So I want to talk a little about something that a couple of you referred to, and that is sort of the difference between partners and funders. And obviously, partners can be funding you. But Stan, you especially, I think, sort of drove this point home that it makes a difference if people are sort of acting in a partnership role and getting your buy-in. I think everybody on this webinar understands the difference between partner and just going and saying, can I have money, and then coming back much later. But can all of you talk a little about sort of what are the things they do to make you partners? I'm more interested in the kind of actual steps. You know, is it coming in early to talk about it? How does that work, and what ends up making a good partner so that you feel invested in the project and as much as you're also putting dollars into the project? Stan, I'll start with you.
So in my experience, one of the most important things is really engagement and a focus on performance and what performance outcome you're trying to achieve. I find that to be a really powerful organizing tool that helps not just bring partners in and get us in the right mindset and for the right reasons, but keep us in and keep us working together toward a shared goal, even when politics, the bureaucracy, the rules kind of pull us apart, create some tension there on a project. I find that kind of saying what we're after on the 520 bridge is we're after person throughput and we're after reliability, as opposed to we're out to build a bridge that has good transit facilities and pedestrian facilities on it. That also helps people be adaptable, because transportation projects often have a long lifespan, and you need to kind of go, oh, there's fits and starts in any big, complicated project. So that, to me, kind of having a shared set of performance objectives that outlasts any one champion and outlasts any one funding source or trend in transportation can be a really powerful organizing tool among organizations.
Other thoughts on your grantees as partners, and what makes them a partner?
I'd say from my perspective, we are more likely to fund a project, initiative, pilot, demonstration, whatever it is, when there are multiple folks at the table. And I'll give an example. Here in Boston, you may know we are situated on the water. We don't have a great water transportation system. We've been approached 101 times from individual organizations and or agencies saying, hey, would you please fund a water transportation study? And each time we go back and we say, who else is at the table? Because if the state DOT, the city, Mass Port, who manages our ports, X, Y, and Z, other major landowners or others that have a stake in the waterfront aren't at the table and putting down some dollars for this, then we're not going to be the only ones to step up, because we want to see projects that we fund go somewhere. So as an example, when other people step up to the table as partners, we are also willing to step up.
Great, thank you. So one of the other things we talked about was kind of the ability to include technology or innovation into sort of more traditional projects. But let's just talk about, I mean, there are, you know, formula programs and other ways to fund what is typically thought of as transportation. How is it different trying to fund these smart city innovative programs than it is trying to fund maintenance of a local road or a new interchange or any of the kind of typical things that a DOT or that might occur in typical programs.
Doug, one of the things that I would offer that I think is really interesting is the fact that there is some private money out there to be had. And I'll bring up, obviously, you look at the valuation of a company like Uber or Lyft. These are some of the large, highest valued privately held companies in the country right now. And so I think that they do bring a lot of their own resources to the table, which I think does change a little bit. Obviously, they're very guarded about their company secrets. And I think that brings me just a little bit to thinking about, how important it is to get a good value proposition in any engagement you might have. MTC recently negotiated on behalf of 5 cities in the Bay Area a 7,000 bike share system that's going to be sponsored by Ford Motor Company. I could repeat that, but, I think everyone was quite shocked here when they wanted to, go that big here. That is to the tune of almost $50 million. And I think their value proposition was, hey, we would like to save you taxpayers the $25 million you were planning on spending on bike share so you can spend it on other bike and pedestrian infrastructure. We'd like to sit down with you and talk to you about how we can help you serve both the dense places, the less dense places, low-income minority communities, English as a second language communities as a part of this whole deal. And they were really willing to embrace, what we were looking for. And I just think that's a whole different space that's out there right now that I think is a really exciting difference.
Other thoughts on that? One of the things that it puts me in mind of is just that, and one of the things I think is different is that you really are really talking about very different purposes in many ways than traditional transportation projects, and that because these are in many cases kind of one-off projects, they require an understanding on the part of an agency or a different set of goals. And Doug, you referred to some of those in terms of serving underserved communities. But what are some of the other things? Lisa, you talked about climate. Stan, Christopher, I'm curious about what are the kinds of programs, what are the goals that the funding programs are trying to achieve? It's I haven't in many cases just seen, programs that are saying, just make traffic work better. They're actually trying to do a whole bunch of different things that traditional transportation maybe is thought of as secondary issues.
So one of our programs, a state-funded grant program, is a hybrid. And that makes sense when you think of the state has urban and non-urban areas and legislators who represent both. And it is a program that's designed to kind of help resolve things in the most congested corridors in the state, but also connect communities that are currently not connected. It creates this fascinating mix of grant applications. And despite the fact the program's been around and funded for well over a decade, that is this place where organizations have been able to innovate and to compete for money and to kind of get funding for things that nobody has gotten funding for before, in part because it has that, what I think of as kind of pulling in two directions, that in a way creates this opportunity and space to innovate. Nothing gets 100 points on the 100-point score for that grant, because if it's the most congested area, it already has connections. So in a weird way, the politics that created this odd pairing in one grant program creates space for innovation for cities and others to say, maybe what connecting communities means is that we are connecting people who previously have not had access. So bringing in the equity argument where you're talking about connecting disconnected communities in a very urban area that people generally think of as well served by transit, and that those connections maybe aren't traditional fixed route transit, and maybe they aren't the traditional special needs transportation. They're actually innovations like partnering with Lyft or Uber for first and last mile, and arguing for a competitive grant program that that is connecting communities that currently aren't well connected. So really kind of interesting to see the odd politics of a state where you have to please both the urban and the rural to get something passed, and then using that to your advantage in a competitive grant program for innovation in a way that I don't think anybody expected, but is really creative within the boundaries of the rules. And achieving some success. It's really fascinating.
And Stan, what's the name of that program, of that grant program?
That grant program is called the Regional Mobility Grant Program, a very generic name. But it's been around. It's a state-funded grant program. It's competitive. Local jurisdictions, transits, ports can compete. And that program has evolved significantly in 10 or 12 short years from something that used to just buy a bunch of buses and expand park-and-ride lots into a program that is pushing into the boundaries of equity and special needs populations. TOD, we have not yet had a successful TOD application to that program. We had the first application, a coalition, go after some TOD money in that program. They didn't succeed, but I think we have been looking at the grant program criteria and helping them think about their application in a slightly different way, because we want them to take another shot at that.
And we're getting good interest in that. Can you repeat the name one more time?
Regional Mobility Grant.
Great. And Christopher, I'm going to turn to you, and then I've got one more question. But people should go ahead and chat in questions if you have questions, and we're gonna open up the line shortly to take your questions. Christopher.
Just to piggyback off of what Stan mentioned, on the federal level, the comparable would be our national Tiger program. Because much of the funding that you see in transportation fall into silos, specifically for highway funding or specifically for port funding or specific funds for freight, you rarely get to have the opportunity to be multidisciplinary or just have the ability to bring multiple partners to the table for innovative projects that may cut across those silos. And so the TIGER program really speaks to that, and so I highly encourage folks to look into that program because it allows for such the broadest eligibilities, but as long as it hits those key national objectives that I mentioned before, like economic competitiveness, sustainability, and so forth. But on a piece that Jeff, you mentioned earlier, that is really true about how many of these programs that are siloed really require partnerships. One of the things that, you know, we know on the federal level that there's a TAP program, which is the Transportation Alternatives Program, and most recently the FAST Act now has enabled nonprofits to now gain access to those funds. And so it's really thinking about who are those players on the ground that you may want to partner with to get your projects connected with. Also, we've seen in other places where working with the public health community who have the ability to connect to funding on their side of the ledger, like the prevention fund, which is about encouraging greater health outcomes in a community, actually having transportation advocates have conversations with their public health authorities, maybe they gain additional resources in that way. So really the TIGER program is probably our best federal program that really allows the cross-pollinization, but also recognizing that non-traditional partners also themselves may have access to other funding that may not be in the traditional transportation world.
Great, thank you. And just remember, if you've got a question, just chat in that you have a question, and then we'll open up your line and you can ask it directly. Christopher, let me do a quick follow-up with you. TIGER really came out of Congress, but the administration, through the Smart City Challenge, the Lono Bus, other programs, has been pretty supportive of Smart City activity and providing funding opportunities. do a little crystal balling. What does the new administration mean?
It's an open question. The new secretary, who has just been recently nominated, Elaine Chao, has been known to be more of a manager versus a visionary that you've seen, let's say, like from LaHood and Secretary Fox. But I think the real key here is less about the next administration. The question is, will individuals like you be very vocal about the needs of your community? And what we've seen thus far, using Tiger as being an example, which was a controversial program at the beginning and was threatened many, many times because of local groups who saw this program as an avenue for their project, were very vocal, advocated for that program, and now today, after several iterations, has received bipartisan support. So I think what we should be mindful of is that there's a lot to be known about this incoming administration on a lot of these issues, but because this is a issue, particularly around how to make our cities more innovative in the space of transportation, as long as those communities are vocal on Capitol Hill and with the administration, we've seen in the past, that has made sure many of these programs have stay in power. So I definitely encourage folks to call the members of Congress to show and speak about the value of these programs as Congress and administration review them in the next month or so.
Great. Thank you, Christopher. Doug, can we talk a little about MPOs for a second? I'm just curious what programs you've seen funding come out of that MPOs are in charge of that end up funding these kind of smart city projects. And then I'm wondering kind of what's the approach that's been successful, and also what have you seen cities do where you're like, that's clearly not the way to approach us? And I'll have that question for other folks on the panel as well. But go ahead, Doug.
I'm not gonna rise to the bait on the last one. Sorry.
Come on.
Right, sorry, guys. You know, I think one of the things, maybe to just take a small step back, also just to remind ourselves we're in such early days, and I really enjoyed that last conversation because I do notice within my own esteemed agency, there's been a lot of kind of ready a fire aim, and I think that's understandable because there's been a lot of great press when you're innovative and you're cutting edge, and who doesn't want to be innovative and cutting edge? But I think kind of back to the
Dan doesn't want to.
Right. But I bet his boss thinks he does, right? But I do think, you know, just importantly, I just want to reiterate, you know, I'm hoping that we can start to articulate kind of what we're after. You know, we have extensive performance metrics that we use for our planning and monitoring processes here. And so I think we need to be thinking about those specifically going forward so that we're building grant programs, planning scenarios, et cetera, that hopefully reinforce that. So I would just say, you know, kind of as a reminder, and this is all just the planner in me perhaps talking, so you can just blow it off if you want. You know, right now, you know, I think we're seeing this pop up in a few different spots. For example, we're working with folks right now around an FTA 5310 grant application cycle to look to build smarter platforms, as I was describing before, to serve the needs of our kind of highest mobility need communities, our low-income, senior, and disabled folks. MTC, different than many MPOs, helps administer STP and CMAQ funding. We use that funding to do studies, obviously to fund planning here. You know, and I'm honestly hoping that MTC will get into the business of providing grants to cities in the Bay Area to help them start getting ahead of the changes that they will be wanting to prepare for, which could be here pretty soon. You know, if you need to do the super sexy, you know, curb, you know, management study that you have to do if you want to incentivize, you know, drop-offs for carpool apps, you know, at your transit stations, you have to do a study. It costs money. So I think we need to be looking under kind of every rock for opportunities to help, you know, pilot a few key pieces of the work, and then help, you know, replicate that work within our region, within our state. I think a lot of this is going to be really bottoms-up work, which is why I think the cities piece is so critical when we think about how this is going to play out.
Thanks, Doug. And Stan, I see I forced you to issue a rebuttal. I apologize.
I'd love to give an example to follow up on Doug,
that'd be great.
A real-world example where this local jurisdictions partnered with the state on a research project about park and rides. You know, I work for a department that's mostly highways. We love that. We care about them deeply. We own the land underneath them. And so we did a research project with transit agencies and local jurisdictions about urban park and rides that was really non-controversial about, you know, who's using them, how are they using them, nothing radical, fresh, or new. But what it did was it got us a step into the process of moving to managing park and rides differently and first and last mile access to park and rides in ways that are innovative in our region. And it built a partnership that has endured. And it took what was going to be something wildly controversial and has allowed us to kind of pass the baton from agency to agency to move it forward in a shared direction to the point where we're beyond piloting managed parking and we're starting to implement managing parking at overcrowding parking rides, which is for us politically brutal. Yeah. But it has not been. And it all started with a little bit of research money working together and then keeping those folks marching forward. So I have seen that over and over again, where research funding with a partnership has helped us dip our toe in the water on the tough controversial issue and move it forward. I also just want to say the University of Washington has folks who are big data experts, and we are just now, they are not transportation experts. They are big data experts, but they have interests in transportation and in community. And there, if you're not talking to those folks or seeking those folks out in the university in your state or region, they feel our pain in transportation. They are passionate about equity. They're passionate about the environment. Find out their passion. Talk to them and see if you can rope them in to transportation projects at that earliest phase. Really awesome where some of those ideas go.
Thank you. And just a reminder to people, if they have a question, go ahead and chat that in. Christopher, you wanted to add on to that? And then Lisa, I'm going to force your hand on the what do grantees do wrong.
But this is the last point that Stan made about universities. There are a number of university transportation centers, universities that hold grant dollars that the federal government gives out to do research. And so to Stan's point, there are a number of these institutions across the country, so you should find out where is the closest one to you, because they actually have about $75 million where they can allocate to do innovative research, and they are in the transportation space. So I just wanted to highlight that as another pot that you definitely should look at.
And thank you, Christopher. I think that's a resource that a lot of people aren't fully aware of, particularly maybe at the city level. And I'll kind of lead this off, Lisa. I was a funder in the federal government before this job, and one of the things I found oftentimes was that grantees sort of didn't really understand the agenda that we had in issuing the funding, and instead they're, you know, and obviously I want them to accomplish what they need to accomplish, but it also has to address my outcomes in the same way that you have climate and other specific imperatives. And obviously when they can come in and say, here's how it helps get what you need, and you know, that made a big difference. But what are some of the things that you see when people are approaching BAR on this topic?
Yeah, I think that's definitely one of them, Jeff. I think the other two that come to mind are a good grantee will be really smart at knowing who is the right organization or agency to deliver a message. And oftentimes when we're funding nonprofits, some of them clearly have a slant or very, very left or a little bit more center, but really understanding what the issue is and who should be doing the work and then who is delivering that message. Being really smart about that, being really smart about the politics can really help and go a long way to show us that a grantee really understands the issue and the impact. I think the other one, especially in this space, is at least at BAR, we're here for the long term, and we look towards the long term. We're not here to fund the latest and greatest idea that pops up on CityLab, for example. We're really in it for the long-term game. So if someone is looking for some funding for a pilot, questions like, okay, well, why, and how is it meeting your goals? How does that relate to our strategy? How are you going to measure the success of the pilot? And if it is successful, what happens next? And if it isn't successful after you measure it, then what happens after that? So really not just thinking about getting all excited about the latest and greatest thing or idea, but really connecting that thing or idea to the bigger picture is wonderful.
And I think that's really, in many ways characterizes some of the frenzy that's out there right now. Is there's just a lot of ideas, in many cases sort of without an overall framework for thinking about it or thinking about what are the unintended consequences that may arise from it. So I think those points are really important. We've got another 2 minutes or so, so I'm gonna offer one last opportunity to ask questions from participants on the webinar. And while we wait for any of those, I'm gonna give each of our panelists just an opportunity to offer any final thoughts that you might have about where you think this space is going, what you think needs to happen next, and anything else you want to touch on. And Christopher, I will start with you.
As I said before, there are a number of programs on the federal level that should be of interest. We enumerated a number of those. But I cannot stress enough the importance of making your members of Congress and your senators aware of the type of project and the innovation that you're trying to do in the city, because actually when these programs come up for realization or appropriations, your members of Congress are thinking about their specific project, and you want to make sure that when they are talking about cuts or increases, that they have your project in mind. And on top of that, it's also critical to ensure that you have the right partners at the table, including those who are traditional, but also be thinking outside the box. Increasingly, we're finding that dollars are coming from different places, and that's largely due to the fact that you brought a great diversity of stakeholders and partners to the table. And on the federal level, they love to see things like that, and they try to work on that.
Great. Thank you, Christopher. Doug?
I think I would just really, double down on this comment of just trying to think about what you're trying to achieve, because I think that might help, steer some of your initiatives or think about some of the most intractable transportation problems to try and help that your community is facing, to try and help, think about where to focus, because I could certainly imagine a scenario where you find yourself getting pitched a lot or feel a need to be kind of doing something, and that might not be necessarily, what you know to be the area or the gap that most needs to be addressed in your transportation and maybe economic development and community planning system.
Perfect. Thank you, Doug. Lisa?
I think you guys all sharing your information and ideas and experiences with each other, as cheesy as that sounds, is quite important. Kind of reducing redundancies and building off each other's experiences and data, as opposed to everyone starting from zero, is really important as we continue to learn and the space is moving super, super quickly. I assume most people know that UC Davis, as well as others, but UC Davis, I think, is kind of trying to own this space a bit in terms of having some research dollars and really investing some staff time and money into the automated shared electric vehicle space. And I think they have a head start, in a sense, and are one of the many resources, I think, that can provide that university research funding resource that some folks are looking for.
Thank you, Lisa. And Stan?
I have to echo the idea of having a kind of organizing around a performance goal can help bring people together. I've seen a dichotomy between old school shared mobility and new school shared mobility. Shared mobility has been around for a long time. It's called walking, biking, riding a bus, vanpooling, two-person carpool. Those are awesome and really important to the performance of our system. You don't have to choose between old and new. You can bring them together around a performance objective and see what we can do to, like, what's going to most efficiently, most effectively get us what we want as a community. I also love the fact, Doug, you are my new favorite person of the day, because you brought up equity in this conversation, and I think that even us stodgy old states are working really hard to be thoughtful about that and embed it into everything that we do. I think that could be a powerful thing to, again, say what's the performance we need and how do we organize around that to bring old school and new school together and not get caught up in just shiny new.
And I think that's a hugely important point, Stan. Just the unintended consequences that could result from sort of an unthoughtful, uneven implementation of, you know, public and private innovation could be really very harmful for particular communities that have traditionally been left out. And at the same time, I think there are real opportunities to give people new access to jobs, to provide services in places that are really prohibitive in terms of their cost to serve with traditional technologies and approaches. So, you know, it's both opportunity and threat, and I know we all are striving to sort of make sure that we get the most of the opportunity and do away with the threats. I really want to thank the entire panel for joining us today. We're going to have a virtual round of applause here. You can imagine it. Everyone's like tapping keys on their keyboard or something. So thank you for that. And now I think we're going to have a quick announcement from Russ about the upcoming meeting in January. So thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. And again, thank you, Christopher and Lisa and Stan and Doug, for joining us today. As Jeff mentioned, I do have a quick announcement, and that is we are making the final arrangements for the meeting in Washington, D.C. on January 12th and 13th. We've had a number of questions come in, and I just wanted to check with people on who will be attending from your organizations, and that you let us know how many nights in the hotel that you need so we can make sure we put a roof over your head while you're here. We'll send out more details and as final of an agenda as we can do a month out in the middle of next week. And as always, if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to Rob or I. We'll be sending out a summary of this meeting today along with an online survey that we'd love to get your feedback on as we continue to work on and plan these meetings in the Smart City Collaborative. And so, again, lastly, I'll say thank you for Jeff for being our moderator today, and thank you for to Lisa and Stan and Doug and Christopher for joining us today and sharing their experience and expertise as it comes to partnering and funding with their organization. So thanks, everyone.